Our goal is to lead the upper end of the market and innovate and make sure that the brand has value, it has emotion, and it moves it. If you worry about the opening price point of the market, if you look at Nike, you look at Apple, you look at other categories, those that are worried about losing share in the opening price points actually go down and kill their brand, or they fragment themselves and lose innovation.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This show, like many, features successful entrepreneurs, but unlike others, all our guests, like you and I, choose Colorado. Success here is multidimensional. That's why the show tagline is Live, Work, Love, Colorado. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Sean Neville, CEO of BOA Technology. And you probably know BOA Technology, the creators of the revolutionary BOA Fit system that uses a dial to adjust fit on footwear and a lot of other products, some being sold now and some in development. We're going to hear about more of those when I talk with Sean. We'll discuss BOA's growth, managing the brand, this delicate dance of integrating the BOA brand into and alongside those of huge global brands, and finally about Sean's approach to leadership. This episode is special. We're here at BOA, an amazing facility with a live audience. Following my interview with Sean, we'll entertain questions from guests. Sean, thanks for joining me. Yeah, and we appreciate you having us, and I want to thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Keg Logistics. They support Colorado entrepreneurism, and they support this show. Thanks also to the Colorado Chamber of Commerce for its support for me and ProCo 360. So, shall we start?
Absolutely.
Good. So, first of all, BOA Technology overview. How about telling us basics about the business and in this building that we're in?
Sure. Well, first of all, you're in our building. You probably have a bit of an echo because we're sitting in our atrium.
Yeah.
And we simply state that BOA is about delivering performance fit. It's what we mean by that is that traditionally people wear laces, Velcro, and other opportunities to close products. We see our products as revolutionary in that we don't just want to make someone close their product. We want to improve their performance. Mm-hmm. So it started in snowboarding, as you might know. Gary Hammerslag, who founded the company, saw a problem that he wanted to solve. Today, we see opportunity that we want to create. Hmm. So the essence of evolution from a closure system to a revolutionary fit system has opened up a number of opportunities for us as a company. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're going to dive into all of that. First, I'm really curious. I mean, BOA started only 18 years ago as this thing that was better than laces. Yeah. And your product now is in millions of snowboard boots, bike shoes, work boots, medical devices, lots more. I mean, how did this happen so fast?
Well, I think it's a bit of an overnight success in the making.
Mm. Yeah.
So from our view, although we're still a teenager at 18 years old, is we still only have 1.5% of our potential market. And so part of the success of BOA is, first of all, an incredible group of people that think from the end market. So if you look at snowboarding, how do we revolutionize that and continue to do that, even with products from Burton that just came out, mm-hmm. that actually constantly improve performance of the athlete and also make it a great experience. So from my viewpoint, and I've only been here 2 years yeah. as a custodian of the company, is that how do we keep that maniacal focus on what we create?
Well, you know, this is clearly an example of a better mousetrap, right? This closure, the dial closure versus laces and so forth. But a lot of better mousetraps fail. So why do you think this one has had this enormous and fast success?
Well, first of all, I think it's a different mousetrap, not a better mousetrap.
Yeah.
So I think the context of how people historically saw laces was to solve a problem of closing as opposed to transform fit. And so when we look at the biomechanics of the consumer and the human as they move, luckily enough, I'd been in the athletic and technology industry for a few years before this, always looking at how do we see the human move and how do we create a better dance with them. Mm-hmm. And so from that aspect, as you look at our products, we're pretty proud of them, mm-hmm. is that we actually look at it from an entirely different lens than trying to compete with it. We want to alter it and transform it.
So as you transform it, how much energy, I mean, we're going to talk about Gore-Tex in a little bit because I think there's some amazing parallels between that. But as you transform and create a brand new product category, really, I mean, as you've done that, people are starting to copy you now, right? How much energy goes into protecting this dial system?
Well, I think like any market leader, you have a focus. One is market leader must define, create, and grow the market. They don't control it. The biggest mistake people make, I believe, is that when they become large and created, they want to protect everything. Obviously, from an IP perspective, we want to protect what we've created in a fair way. But from a standpoint of innovation, which is critical, we're constantly innovating. We have 76 new patents this year. When you look at the brand, as we look at helping consumers dial in what it means and what the mentality of it is, moving it from just a component to an action, how do you scale it to be competitive? And then obviously, one of the things we talk about is making sure you're not greedy.
What's that mean?
Greed means, from this standpoint, in this sense, it's not greed is good. Greed is actually a challenge. And so as we're leading, how do we create products that have a fair price, deliver a fair value? Are we creating the right dynamics for everyone? And I think with that, goodwill actually creates a gap between us and the competition.
So are you saying you don't care if somebody copies what you do?
Well, I think you always care, but the truth is, in a society where we want competition. Competition is good. The question is, are we better? Do we have a brand? And do we establish that? So whether it's Gore-Tex or Intel or other companies, the market leader has actually helped expand the pie. We only have 1.5% of our addressable market. So think about that.
Well,
so
if we're trying to think about how you're not caring about somebody like copying this dial system.
Well, we care. The question is, we today have 90% of our addressable market. Our guess is when the market's 10 times larger, we'll probably have 70%. From a personal standpoint, dealt with this with the adoption of UHF RFID. Our goal was, even though we were the market leader at 90%, 5 years later we had 70%, but we were 10 times larger. So the context of it, I would say, is are we doing the right things to constantly innovate? Of course we want to protect ourselves. And we're fortunate enough that today we don't have a major competitor, but we will.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. Even as you're evolving the business, you've talked about going from this closure system to performance enhancing gear. So talk about that, and maybe in context of an example.
So I think our historical position, which has been very strong, has been focused on quality and durability. One of the biggest barriers to consumers using our products years ago was, will it break? Does it work? It wasn't necessarily if it was better. The assumption was it was easier, but they didn't know if it was better. So our challenge was, how do we look at that coupled with three other prisms? So as we're building out downstairs, it's top secret, so you can't see it, partially because it's not built yet. But it's a human performance fit lab. And if you look at especially the footwear industry, most of technology was driven around what we call the outsole and the midsole. That's where all the energy was in terms of performance. When we look at an athlete for agility and speed and that combination, when you look at power and precision in golf and tennis, you look at endurance and health in the context of how you connect with your product and how much pressure you provide. We've already built out a team, and our objective is we actually have a partnership with the University of Denver with their biomechanic division to come out with four breakthrough papers on the revolution and evolution of fit, combined and tied to our products. With that, as we go to power brands and we say, let's reimagine it versus just replace a lace, it's now created that conversation of how do we revolutionize the look, feel, and ultimately performance.
So what are you seeing, if you were to create an example of an actual performance improvement that you're driving and that it's being that you can measure out in the field, what are you doing?
So let me give you an example. I've got a product here that actually is coming out next year.
Is it a running shoe?
It's a running shoe. It's actually a trail running shoe. So it's for high performance in tough terrain. And obviously, one of the biggest challenges is what we call the lateral medial movement and control, which can have an impact on your performance, but also your health and injury. And how do you lock into that product to also create freedom in the forefoot? And so with this product, we've been able to prove through testing in our early pilots that the impact on legs, knees, and the ability to take off and move through the product has been dramatically improved. We're working now with our brands. We're not going to publish anything until we have it validated with university studies. But our objective is to be as advanced and as focused as every major brand in their biomechanic departments. We were out with ASICS, and they've got a major human performance fit lab. Our objective is, can we compete at the same level in thinking about the end consumer and challenge them to create new products?
Talk about challenging them to create new. And actually, before I do that, I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, and I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Sean Neville, CEO of BOA Technology. And as you talk about challenging your brands. What does that mean?
Well, I think if we're a consumer-driven company with a focus on our brands, we want to be as acutely aware of how the consumer behaves, what they need, and what role our products play in delivering that. So we see ourselves not as an ingredient, but an enhancer of performance.
Hmm. So do your brands see you the same way, or do they think they could do it without you?
Well, I think everyone isn't sure. Well, we believe for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's about respect and also the work we do and the team we have, that a lot of them, most of them come from that end market. So when we think about upper technology, or if we look at technology in the medical industry or in helmets, we've got to be able to come to them with proof and that we've thought about it from our prism. We don't want to completely reconstruct the shoe or the helmet or the brace, but we want to make sure we think about it from how we can make it better.
So is that what the Performance Fit Lab is all about?
Yes, absolutely.
So describe that and where that's coming from and the strategy around that.
So we've launched two relative new initiatives. One is advanced development from a consumer product standpoint. So I think our primary focus in the past was creating new components. Now we want to think from the construction of the end product, how it configures, as well as our components. So that advanced development team is constantly looking at what's happening in materials and products and creating ideas in two dimension, three dimension, and bring it to the market.
So does something like ASICS or Under Armour or Burton, I mean, do they want you helping them design their products, or do they just want you to like say, hey, help us fasten it?
Well, I think it depends on how we approach it.
Yeah.
So I think if we create the imagination of possibility and come and say, hey, we're thinking about some ideas of how we could apply this. It's not about arrogance. It's about how we're thinking about performance and changing the market. We're not telling them to change their outsole or midsole or color or their branding. Mm-hmm. We're saying in this area, we believe we have a possibility for you to improve. And with the relationships we have, and I think with the heritage we've got, doing it the right way, we're now having more and more innovation sessions with major brands. And it's exciting.
Well, from what I've heard, too, is that they'll come here and they'll brainstorm with you guys, and you actually go into your R&D center and you develop prototypes and things right while they're here. Is that working out?
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing facility because we actually can do 3D prototyping to initial proto development. We actually design and can develop end products as well with our prototyping team. We've got a lot of talented people that come from the end market, and we create that environment so when they come here, first of all, we want them to know that it's not that we're looking for equal footing. We want them to know that we think from the future, we're innovators, and that we're partners with them.
So as you think about growing the business, are you thinking about adding more customers? Are you going deeper with your... Because it sounds like what you're describing is deeper, deeper, deeper allows you to evolve your product within as it's integrated into theirs.
Like sustainability, less is more. We actually will have 20% less customers in the next 18 months than we have today.
But your revenue will do what?
Be stronger. And I think the team had already done a great job of targeting. We want to be on the best products and the most premium segments of what we're targeting on their best gear and make it better and build it out. When we look at our success in categories like snowboarding, where we're now over 40% of the market, it came with deep relationships, deep partnerships, and building that. We have actually no new segments that we have targeted for the next 10 years. We actually can build in and deepen what we have and still build our business 5 to 10-fold.
Well, you say no new segments, but you've got all kinds of interesting products that I've seen walking around and so forth. I mean, you've got motocross pants, you've got helmets, you're designing some pants for me to wear at Thanksgiving. Right?
I'd like that to see you wear those, yes.
Yeah. So when you say no new product lines, but you're really developing new product lines, what's that?
Well, I'll give you a perspective. In the outdoor footwear category, where you've got from high-end mountaineering to trail, there are 120 million pairs of that category today that are above $100. We have less than 1% of the market.
Wow.
We can add value. If you look at the performance run market or court basketball as well as tennis, today we have 0.001% of the market, and we can make a difference. If you look at the golf market outside of Asia, we have 73% of the golf market above $100. We have 7% in the U.S. and Europe. So how do we make it better, make it more interesting, innovate, and go deep?
But don't you want, is what you're saying, you want a continuum of products? Like you want a cheap line, you want a middle, a good, better, best kind of thing?
I would say we look at it as we have a premium plus, which is where we have a very strong position. In most categories, product above $250. Then we have a premium segment, which is the core price points of the premium product. Then there's a layer of mid-price performance, which we're assessing how far we go. But our most important thing is establish and build from the top down, and that's where we can build longevity.
Got it. Well, as a consumer who loves outdoor gear, I'm going to ask a really long question. Everybody, bear with me because it's kind of teeing up what I think. Yeah, take a drink. Tease up what I think is a really important topic, and that's that. I mean, we already talked about this, but when BOA started, created its own space, right, with this substantive innovation. And I mentioned Gore-Tex earlier, and I think there's a really interesting parallel. And when Gore-Tex came out with a fabric that was both breathable and waterproof, it was sort of its benefits were obvious, and people wanted it really badly, universally, and sort of like what I think is BOA's closure system, the dial. Now in the Gore-Tex category, though, all these other companies have created a waterproof, breathable fabric. And so now you don't have to have Gore-Tex to have this benefit. And so I'm wondering, like, you've said you're not that worried about protecting and so forth, but yet what happens if BOA doesn't become necessary in order to have the kind of closure that you develop?
Greed is bad. Competition is good. I'll say it again. In the context of competition, this market can grow 20 to 30 times what it is today. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to lead the upper end of the market and innovate and make sure that the brand has value, it has emotion, and it moves it. Mm. If you worry about the opening price point of the market, if you look at Nike, you look at Apple, you look at other categories, those that are worried about losing share in the opening price points actually go down and kill their brand, or they fragment themselves and lose innovation. So you have to decide where you're going to play. Now, we've created a sub-brand that we're testing in China with Anta, the largest sports brand there, which essentially plays in the mid-market. We're being very careful. We believe that it can buttress BOA and position it, but we've got to be careful. But we believe that as long as our eye is on the future of 5 and 10 years, we won't chase the short term.
Well, and it sounds like your positioning to do that is to always stay at the innovative leading edge, the higher end, and that keeps you differentiated. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have to have enough paranoia, like Andy Grove always said at Intel. And even though he was a market leader and innovator, we've got to make sure there's a major competitor coming. So do we have scale? Do we have innovation? Do we have our brand built? And are we doing the right things?
And one of your taglines that I like is the world's best gear just got better.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the position then that it's always going to be elevating your brand partners?
Yeah, we look at actually the prism through how we want consumers to feel, which is obviously about being a pioneer in the edge of performance. Making the best gear better is a very simple mantra. It was actually here before I got here, and I loved it, and we've actually amplified it. So the essence of that and revolutionizing fit is very important. So when we talk to brands, we are absolutely driven to make sure that the top of their line is it performing better. And that's why the Performance Fit Lab, we actually set it but couldn't prove it. So the scientific aspect is what we're layering in to make sure that we have proof that as we move from closure to fit, we've got something to back it up.
Well, and you're in all these really, really well-known world brands.
Yeah.
In fact, if the wall that everybody walked past as they came in here was all these brands like Under Armour, Adidas, La Sportiva. Does Burton not, like if someone walked into a snowboard shop and said, I want BOA boots, wouldn't that just drive Burton crazy?
It's a bit of a drag for them.
Exactly. So, how do you manage that? The same thing with...
Well, I think I'll give you... Burton's a great example. They relaunched the Step-In product. Our objective...
This is the boot over here?
And it's actually helped catalyze them, and they incorporated our BOA system with basically two-dial system that actually created incredible fit and comfort. We don't want to level the playing field. We want to elevate the playing field. What I mean by that is that when BOA products are on categories, it normally raises the average retail price by 15 to 20%. So by virtue of that, then the question is they must compete. So essentially, you know, golf market in Japan, a good example, we were out there 6 months ago talking to two of the major brands. BOA represented the entire growth of the industry over the last 7 years in Japan. The industry's actually declined. The average retail price was up 23%, all because of BOA adoption. And once we establish that and the consumer is willing to spend up, think about that when we get into categories that actually have a high price sensitivity and we can deliver it. That's why the scientific element is so important.
Wow. And so do you ever have awkward conversations with your brand partners that say, you know, like, could you make your name a little smaller? Or, I mean...
We're hard of hearing.
Yeah.
It's tough. You know, I can't hear everything they're saying.
I mean, that must be an awkward tug of war at times.
Well, I think the question is, are we building value in what BOA delivers and what it stands for? Because of the quality standards that we have, because of the lifetime guarantee we have, and because of the experiences, we have almost a 95% retention of consumers. When they buy BOA, mm-hmm. they'll buy it again. Now our challenge is how do we cross-market them into other categories? So the good news is they've had a great experience. We do have competitors out there, and you never want to disrespect them. They've had a hard time matching our quality, consistency, and when people see BOA, it's become the standard for the category, which is helping elevate them.
So what's a good example of what you would consider to be a really great partnership where you've been able to enhance value and they've come back in turn and weren't paranoid, weren't worried, but felt super collaborative?
Well, I wouldn't point out one. I think that, first of all, we have a great team that works with our brand partners. And as it continues to evolve, the best brand partner deals with all the P's very effectively with us. First of all, they start with the positioning and the brand and the product. Are we on the right products? Are we innovating and thinking about products that are moving the market and creating energy? Are we marketing together? Are we operationally effective? So to me, it's very consistent with a strategic partnership with any company. And so I would say the vast majority of our partners are in that space.
Do you do collaborative marketing? Like, do you provide ad dollars and so forth that they use to promote their products?
Yeah, we provide different initiatives. We provide platform of elements. And we're about to do even more direct-to-consumer marketing to build the BOA brand. And so in 2 months, we're launching boafit.com. It will be much more consumer-facing, and our expectation is any product that you ever thought of from BOA, you can see and experience and tie them into pioneers. So we want that to be a value-added benefit to our brands, that we're giving them added value. So if you put BOA on it, we'll actually help promote it, support it, and augment it.
Wow. So when you promote BOA, though, are you promoting it? I see these beautiful beauty shots of your product on your website, and you can't quite tell what it's on, right? I mean, do you promote BOA separate from the brands that you're representing?
No, I think they're not mutually exclusive because we're part of it. I would say most of our ads, although we have a large branding, is we're promoting great products and their innovation. So our objective is not to just denote BOA. It's actually leveraging what we're doing with those great brands and making that exciting and innovative.
That's cool. I would think that would endear them to you even more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit to you. And I know you've been here for a couple of years, and before you were in the shoe business as well, right? Aerosol.
Aerosols, Reebok and a few others, yeah.
But your LinkedIn profile describes you this way. I'm going to read it. Ouch. You probably remember what you put on. Do you remember what you put on? Aspiring somewhat below average musician, mediocre athlete, and passionate, appreciative of family, friends, colleagues, community, the environment, and life in general. It sounds like the answer to a Miss America question. But beyond that.
I lost.
So first, though, we have to start. What aspirations do you have as a musician?
Well, I normally can perform in front of people that work for me.
Yeah.
Or family members.
Really?
Very good. I have really not broken through the general public.
Yeah. So you proclaim, when you say perform, what do you do?
I sing poorly. I play guitar, ukulele, and play drums as well.
Nice. Very good. We'll do that another time. You also proclaim your passionate appreciation for those in your life, and I'm curious about how that plays out as you lead BOA, because like, how do you approach as a leader being real, being human, being a nice guy at the same time as being a leader of a company that's growing really fast?
Well, everyone at BOA is part of my life.
Want to elaborate on that a little bit?
So I think I don't see the wall between family, business, community. I think they're one continuum. So from that vantage point, I don't see it as balance. I see it as an ecosystem. So I think if you think that way, they're not fighting against each other. So that's how I would see it.
That's cool. Your profile also shares a quote: "The best way to predict the future is to create it." Mm-hmm. You were in the shoe business, we mentioned, and now you're a BOA. I mean, the shoe business is a well-established, still dynamic, but how is it different to create the future to a company like BOA than it was at a shoe company?
Well, I'd say my biggest experience was running Avery Dennison, large packaging labeling, and we were the we essentially created the consumer market for RFID, UHF RFID. So that business went from $15 million to $400 million in 5 years while I was there. And the issue was we were trying to take out barcodes. And why would someone move to RFID? So instead of selling the product, we created the entire solution, bought a software company, bought three printer companies, and created the entire solution from the end market. So I would argue there's a correlation to moving from laces to BOA, moving from barcode, which basically became universal in 1965, to revolutionizing that marketplace and the mindset of the entire solution. So from my viewpoint, I started at Procter & Gamble, I was at Visa early in my career as well. The whole issue was, how do you reimagine what you want the market to move to? And the same thing, the footwear market is a fast-paced consumer market. So you take the empirical side of math with imagination, and I do think BOA ties all those together as it relates to technology as well. Yeah. So obviously I couldn't keep a job, it looks like.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you're doing quite well. So, hey, I think this is a good time to take a break and see if anybody in the audience has questions.
Just a couple questions, Sean. I wondered if you are manufacturing overseas, and if you are, what you think about the current, you know, the trade, the tariffs, et cetera. Then the other two questions I had, there are two markets that I'm very interested in. The first is the shoes for baby boomers, which I am one, and I think there's a huge market for that. And I wondered if when you're designing, if you just focus on the closures or if you also focus on the design of like golf shoes for people in their, you know, 50s and 60s, you want them to fit a little bit differently than when you're 30. And also for the military, there are so many boots that they wear, and I wonder if you've looked at that for closures for the military, because they still just lace them up, and it's not effective.
So man, that's a lot of questions.
It's three more. Three questions.
First, we manufacture, we actually have a partner factory. They're also a part owner of our company that's based in Shenzhen, China. They're our sole partner. We're essentially vertically integrated. From a personal standpoint, working globally in manufacturing, design, development, and end market for maybe 25, 30 years, I'm not concerned. I actually believe that cooler heads will prevail. I believe that the trade dynamics between our two countries, from our viewpoint, is positive. They're also an important end market for us. And so, as you know, developing nations move from agrarian to manufacturing to end consumer markets, information leaders, as well as technology. So I think just like Japan and Korea, especially Japan 35 years ago where there was lots of issues, that's actually evolved into a great relationship. So I would expect that dynamic. We're not concerned. We're obviously watching it, but we don't see a concern. With regard to consumers, I think the one great benefit of BOA, if you look at golf as an example, because of the flexibility of our fit system, and I'd appreciate you not saying closure, Nan. It's very hurtful. You know, we're a fit system, a performance fit. And we want you to be a performance. When you're on that golf course, we want you to be performance fit. And so the ability for us to actually alter performance and provide a better fit for all consumers is actually part of our objective. Whether you're 12 years old, 50 years old, or a world-class athlete performing, our ability to have more flexibility in that fit system is what we want every day. So if you look at the Pro SL, we could sell some today from FootJoy. The back end closure actually allows for a much snugger fit, but you can also adjust it quicker. So that especially from a health standpoint, you want micro adjustability so that you can actually adjust during your round based upon how you're feeling, your health, and essentially what's happening for you personally. So the third issue is military. We are in that business. It's clearly a large opportunity. In a number of markets, it's still relatively small. Workwear for us is actually our largest category. And although it's encompassed within our professional group, it's the potential for that continues to be very, very high.
Well, building on that, how do you decide? You've got endless possibilities, endless. People must come to you every day saying, can you put this on? What filter do you use? What lens do you use to decide where you want to spend your time and energy?
So we've broken the business into three primary groups of businesses. One is what we call the mountain. It's our home. It's where we were founded. And performance on the mountain, whether you're in snowboarding, we are going to be launching alpine ski. Our team is committed to it, right? Whoever's here? No problem. But our ability to be the top of the mountain, to be connected to that industry, you look at cycling, we keep that in the mountain because the highest performing cycling is in the mountain. We look at outdoor. That is a foundation. We're still actually, of the entire mountain business, only 3% of our penetration. So we want to stay focused and make sure that we don't lose our roots. In fact, our party next week is going to be Born in the Rockies. So just we're going to stay Western. The second is athletic. Our athletic business has been, if you look at the athletic market, there's about 400 million systems we could sell in athletic. Today we sell about four. We have 1% of the market. So when you think about the bigger picture, we don't want to follow the shiny object. We want to focus on where we can add value. If you look at golf, as I said, we have a very high share in Asia. How do we add value? The biggest issue we've had in the U.S. market and Europe is they perceived it as a closure system that's fast and easy as opposed to high performance. That's why we're going to prove that it delivers power and performance and precision. And then I think our third, and that includes run. Our team's done a great job of establishing us in high-performance run in the Olympics, in high-performance marathons. We hope to be on tennis in one of the majors next year on one or two brands. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And then we have professional. And professional's workwear, uniform, which ties to the military, as well as medical.
I've seen some really cool stuff you've done in the medical world, and that must be tantalizing as well.
It can be. The challenge there, like anything, is where can we add long-term value and where do we focus? A good example, the bracing market, the both prescription and professional bracing market is a huge opportunity for us. We're actually in the prescription bracing market. We have 15% of the business in the consumer market, less than one. But we add amazing value.
Yeah.
So now working with major brands, how do we bring that from all the major extremities, market it, position it, and revolutionize it? Because that's where I think we can add the most value. Of course, we're in other subcategories that are important, but where can we really be meaningful and link to everything around performance?
My question is related to innovation, and how do you create an innovative culture for your engineers, balancing, of course, what you're managing in terms of growth and the numbers and things like that, but how do you keep them in that innovative space and not influenced by external pressures?
Well, I think we want to always be influenced by external opportunity, not pressure, right? And I think pressure is defined by how we create it, and we want good pressure. The simplicity of innovation for us, we've got a very unique situation. And I don't know if we're a unicorn, but we're really, really fortunate, is that when we look at and imagine what we have, the biggest issue from an innovation standpoint is pushing our team to make sure that how are we thinking from the end consumer first? Being out in the market, being on the slopes, being on the golf course, are we thinking about how we can improve and create innovation from that prism and stay very focused? If we chase every new idea, we probably won't make it unique enough. And it doesn't mean we won't create new categories. So it's every meeting we have, how do we intersect that innovation with the consumer insights with also making really cool stuff? We have around the corner, we took it away, but our advanced development team, we also want to be a world leader in material science. How do we look at how materials integrate with our products? How do we combine them and connect them and also make them sustainable? So we're still in the early stages of that and pushing the envelope. So as we have discussions, we say, let's start with the end consumers. It means something. The Performance Fit Lab will be huge for us. I was just meeting with our leader today. We already, through some testing, created three new ideas of improvement just on testing in one day. A lot of big companies, we're small enough. We want to stay really small. We're fast and nimble, I think. Are you guys all aware of that? We say it every day, but we think we're becoming a behemoth. And so we can adjust product immediately. If we make a simple move, it changes performance of that product. We're just in the early stages of that. So it's kind of cool.
That's neat.
I would say our number one challenge is pace. So as we build out our long-term plan, we've got a 10-year horizon, which we call possibility, a 5-year strategic plan, which is probability, and a 1 to 2 year plan, which has to be absolutely broken down in terms of metrics, achievement, and milestones. So the challenge for us is constantly looking through those three prisms. And we just came out of meetings this week. We've got some exciting meetings next week. Is that how do we constantly look at our pace and speed so we're not too far ahead, too far behind? Because we're creating the market, per se. So it's a matter of how do we orchestrate that? Because we're also trying to convert consumers and brands. while also making and creating new products. So from our viewpoint, it's that pacing. Rush slowly is always a great perspective that I love, is that we're going to rush incredibly slow. And how do we make that work across those three views of the world?
That's cool. Wrapping things up, I mean, Colorado's your home. What role does Colorado play in your brand and in your business?
Well, it is my home. I moved here to be close to my mom and sister. My sister's here. I get family support at all these events, which is good. But it's, you know, I went to undergraduate at DU here, which was pretty cool. The vibe and feel of Colorado, from my viewpoint, is amazing. We grew up in Hawaii and lived on the East Coast, and I lived overseas as well. But there's something about this place that's pretty special. And even the vibe of the people that are here and everyone in Colorado that comes here feels privileged. It felt like when I grew up in Hawaii. People felt incredibly privileged to be there. And you're never entitled to it. And so that energy, I think, I feel in this company. I feel privileged to work here. I walk in every day. I got to step up. I got to bring my game because we have great people. We've got this incredible opportunity in front of us. How do we stay humble? How do we stay edgy? And I think those are the elements that I think Colorado has, that vibe that's amazing.
That's cool. I think that's a great place to wrap up, and I think I'll do that right now. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to a live audience conversation with Sean Neville, CEO of BOA Technology. Thanks for joining me on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you, I, and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast and submitting a review. Thanks again to BOA Technology for hosting this interview and ProCo 360 guests. Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And hey, I want to thank our sponsors, Microstar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce. Thanks, too, to audio engineer Sean Grant. A big hand for Sean. Thank you, Sean. But that's the show, Live, Work, Love, Colorado. And that's a wrap, everyone.